the rest is all right. Otherwise, that material would not be on paper. So we'll listen to what he has to say. Over to you.
Okay. Okay, Chair, there's one submission from the South African police. It says, clause 29, sub clause 3, that the police holdings are not appropriate to hold people dependent on substance abuse or drugs. For example, dealing with a user experiencing withdrawal symptoms. I just want to clarify their role as regarding to clause 29.
Have you got that? Can you give us a lead?
Chairperson, we had a lengthy discussion around this with the South African Police Service. And they say it's true that what they're saying in their comments that they don't have facilities for keeping people that are abusing substances. So the agreement that we reached with the Department of with the South African Police Services is that they would that they would remove the person and take the person straight if they realize that he's under the influence of substances, and then they will take the person straight from where the report came from or from where the person is, straight to a hospital, and then the person can prove it, be put through detox. So that they don't keep the person in the cell, but they take them straight from where they are, and they take them to...
That's the sensible route to take. Any objections to that? Yes.
I don't have an objection, but I think we need to, or maybe we don't need to. I want some clarity on whether, you know, we're talking about substance abuse here, which includes alcohol, and we all know that, I mean, a lot of people get locked up in police cells because of alcohol. And probably if they have withdrawal symptoms, the better. Which is probably quite a callous thing to say. But I think that's entirely different from somebody who's on drugs, so to say. Am I right? Am I wrong? Are you suggesting that anybody who's been arrested for drunken driving or whatever should also be taken to hospital? So I just want to know.
If that person hasn't really committed a crime and is just a person who is a danger to himself, as indicated in 29A, danger to himself or to herself or to the immediate environment and cause a public health risk in any other manner that harm to his or own welfare and welfare of his family or others, commit a criminal act to sustain his or her dependence on substance and substances of opiate. Now, in the cases where it's just the first two, I suppose, you know, that's the way we discussed it, but the formulation we can look at at a later stage. But we said that where a person has not committed a criminal offense, then that person must be taken straight to a rehab facility. But if, or rather to hospital for detoxification. But where a person has committed an offense, then that person must actually be taken to the police and be dealt with as with any other criminal who is intoxicated and what have you. And if they have to be taken to the police, there are protocols between the Department of Health and the police in terms of how they deal with those kinds of patients. For instance, the ones who are mentally ill or are psychotic, then they've got restraint systems and what have you. So there is a protocol between the police and the hospital in terms of how they handle those cases. But if there's a crime committed, then the first place would be to the police because there is a crime committed, but not just anybody. That was the argument that was said.
Verification that you're looking for. All right, let's hear the Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, I think the purpose of this clause is there are many people that get arrested for breaking into a car or theft or whatever, and they've actually done that not because they're criminals, but because the habit, the substance abuse is the main thing. But a lot of those people land up in police cells. So what this is trying to do is to give, to empower the family to be able to go to one, if a person has been arrested due to committing a crime, is to be able to go to the prosecutor and say, this person actually belongs in a treatment center. And can you please use this opportunity to help me to get this person in a treatment center? So it is, when people get arrested because of committing a crime, which is normally a theft crime in this case, then they land up in police cells. Unless you actually, via making a sworn statement, get a social worker, the family now, gets a social worker, goes to the prosecutor and says, can you please, when the case comes up, can you please refer this person to a treatment center? So it's an assistance to the family to be able to say, this person has been a danger to himself, maybe he hasn't committed a crime, but he's been a danger to himself and to the family because he's been violent or whatever. Or in another case where the person actually has been a big problem to the family, but they haven't been able to do anything, and then he commits a crime. And then the police, through this act, I think it's been in the previous act as well, is then able to refer him or her to a treatment center through a court order. And that is the whole purpose of this. They land up in the police cell because the police arrest them in terms of the crime that they've committed. So it's not because of the substance abuse, but because of the crime. But in many cases, they get found with substances on them, for example. But, I mean, by that time, they are already a problem, but we just don't want them to land up being in jail when they could, in fact, be assisted by being...
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Deputy Minister, for that clarification. But that doesn't exactly answer the concern by SAPS, because according to my note that I've written here, and it hasn't written exactly like the research has put it, she says police holding cells are not appropriate to hold people, and she's right there, to hold people. So, and that's exactly what they did say. SAPS is saying that, you know, even if they have been arrested for a crime, that the place to put them immediately is not in the police cell, is my understanding, because they can't deal with the withdrawal symptoms of the person once they come round from whatever they're out on. And so they would rather they went somewhere else. So, I mean, how does the department need to deal with that before they go to the police cell?
Assistance there.
Hey, can I just give clarity?
And then he will have the legal... Sorry? Yeah. Then we'll have the legal advisor also make an input.
Maybe I can just get clarity. Where exactly in Section 29 do they say that they must be held in a police cell? 29.
Deputy Minister, yeah. If we go on to the, while you're looking up,
yeah.
Your
could I found it, but could I just say that this thing is according to the provision of the Criminal Procedures Act. The Criminal Procedures Act already prescribes what must happen.
You must understand that, but SACS, when they made their presentation to us, said that, you know, they didn't think a police cell was the right place to be holding someone who was under the influence of substance abuse. So I'm just raising their concern and asking whether the department has any alternative to that.
Thank you, Chair. When we discussed this matter with the SAPS, even after the public hearings, you know, they had issues with two things. Firstly, the arrest itself, and secondly, the holding of a person in custody. Now, they were saying, if we look at the Mental Health Act, it does provide for a system where you don't arrest, but you actually apprehend, because arrest has got consequences. You arrest this person, and within a specific period of time, this person must appear before court. We then agreed with them that we look at what the Mental Health provides in terms of the system of apprehending a person, and then you take this person to a hospital. So the intention was that even with this specific provision, we would also replace arrest with apprehension, so that you don't have to keep this person in custody, but you take this person directly to the hospital. And at the same time, these people will be able to get treatment for detoxification at the hospital.
I'm very happy with that, Chair, because further on we talk about social worker or somebody arresting a person, which I find completely improbable. So I much prefer the apprehend route and going to hospital rather than being arrested and going to prison, a jail, what you call holding cell.
Holding cell. Thank you very much. Would you like to add something?
Yes, Chair. The main thing is that the police man would or woman would make a judgment call about the extent of the crime itself, because if it's a serious crime, then there's assault, there's whatever, then they are able to take those people straight to the police cell, and because it's in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. But where they see that the person is actually so, you know, that he would actually be require apprehension and being sent to a hospital, then they would do that. As you say, we haven't really seen it because it's based on the discussions that we have with the police after the public hearings. But we agree that there are some cases where the police official would then be, you know, required to make the judgment call to see what is the problem and interacting with the people around there to be able to see exactly what the situation is. So there are cases where the person would be taken straight to a police cell, and there are other cases where a person would be taken to hospital for detox purposes.
Sorry to prolong this, Chair, but sir, now is this going to be an informal agreement between SAPS and Social Development, or are we going to sort of clarify this in the bill?
It will be in the bill.
Just from my own experience with the desperation of families who sit with problems of addiction, particularly in poor communities, that they actually find it as a sense of empowerment. By the time that they get the person to a treatment center, quite often the person won't go as a voluntary person because that person is addicted. Then by that time, that person has sold everything in that family off for substance abuse and so on, and have actually committed a lot of crimes. And quite often, this experience of going into a police cell is what shocks them back to reality and actually makes them voluntarily get treatment. So we must be careful also not to decrease the power of the treatment, because we have this thing in government to say poor little thing, and in the meantime we don't actually help the people out there. And I can bring you, if you don't believe me, I can bring you a person. When it was only when he landed up in Portsmouth, after landing up in Noport and everywhere else, that the shock of realizing where he was and being faced with real prisoners actually made him come right. And today he's a manager in a company, he's been rehabilitated. So I also want us to be very careful, you know, when we say, okay, but I mean, you know, is this a good thing or not?
Clarification. I'd like to know whether, against the background of the discussions that have been taking place, are we going to reword this so that there is a clear indication on the route that has to be taken? Is that going to be the case?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Do we go on now to clause 30?
Chairperson, there are no submissions for clause 30.
I'm sorry. I think there was an issue that was Home Affairs on the admission of foreigners.
When
it's
create a subsection under 28 for voluntary treatment by foreigners, because I think we made provision in the committal of persons under involuntary treatment. If it is a term, tell me if I'm wrong. But we didn't make any provision for voluntary service users. So it's something that we'll try and attend to say that people who are, for instance, in the country that are service users, but they are not, you know, they are citizens of the country. How do we deal with those people?
Yes, Ms. Temple.
With greatest respect, but I think you're talking about something to do with Clause 45. I don't think it's under the Clause 30. Because 30 is dealing with admission and transfer of children.
I'm not certain, but I think we can find a place for it when we get to Section 45.
Yeah.
Because here is the section refers, 45 refers to admission by way of a court order of
okay.
the original country. So which means it's involuntary. And in this case, it's voluntary treatment, but we then have to find a place for it.
Okay. When we get to it, you can bring up your recommendation. Anything else under 30? If not, we move on to 31.
Sorry. Maybe I'm misunderstanding. Do you want to create a separate section there for admission of voluntary foreigners?
I think we have to apply my mind to it and then decide what to do with it. But the proposal from Home Affairs was in the section that they were referring to, the section in particular today. We've made in the end for committal of people through the courts and their countries of origin and so on, but we have really dealt with committal of persons here as voluntary services. And if somebody wants to come here and come and receive treatment, not by way of a court order, but voluntarily to come and just get treatment in the country. What do we do? What are the protocols that would prevail in that kind of situation? But let's leave it just for the time.
Normal circumstances that people who want treatment in our country. I'm from the Free State, and I meet a lot of listen to people who have come in for that kind of treatment. Are we thinking of changing it?
What Home Affairs was saying is that you cannot purely on the basis of the fact that you've been admitted to come and undergo treatment in South Africa, saying that you don't have to follow the laws relating to coming in and out. That word has escaped my mind. That deals with the permission for you to enter the country. You still have to follow that route before you can then undertake treatment. You should not think that admission to a treatment center would have allowed you entry into a country.
So about that one? That kind of clarification?
Sure, it will be dealt with under Clause 45.
Okay, lovely. And to now go on to 31.
Okay, Chair. There's a submission from the Department of Education. It proposed that when an alcohol and drug abuser did not commit a crime, is held in temporary custody, pending an inquiry in terms of Clause 31, be held at a treatment center rather than in police cells and prison as proposed in Clause 31. This is most important as drug abusers experience withdrawals after discontinuation of taking drugs. That's all here.
What's the reaction?
This is part of what we discuss also with the SAPS people, where we refer to arrests or not, they should not go to a police center, but rather to a treatment center or to a hospital.
You happy with that? Minister, I heard you saying something. Could you do it?
My apologies, Jay. I'm just saying that I'm mumbling because I maybe didn't read the bill, but does it actually specify if the person has not committed a serious crime? Because if we are saying that somebody who has committed a serious crime must not be taken into a police cell, but must rather be taken to a hospital, then I think something is seriously wrong.
Yes.
Clause 29.1a up to C actually indicates that this person, no criminal offense would have been reported.
Oh.
But it may be that this person, in order to maintain his habit, would be committing a crime, but a crime would not have been reported. So the aim purely of making such a sort of statement is for this person to be admitted at a treatment center, not to report a criminal offense. But it will be differentiated where, for example, this person was arrested, and while this person was arrested, you then realize that he is also, or he or she is also abusing substances. It will be a different matter. Because you will then be treating it as a criminal matter.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, just to add on to it, the next section actually deals with the committal of persons to a treatment center after a conviction. So we're getting to that section. This one, the section 31, actually deals with persons who have not committed to crime.
Any crime. No. Anything else under 30 that you would like to? I can't hear it. So we go on to 31. Yes.
So is it possible, can I ask the pastor, is it possible to build that provision in? The same as we, or will it be covered? Then when we redraft 29, will that concern about the cell be covered there? So we don't need to put it in 30 as well. Okay.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I just want to raise the issue. When we're looking at 29.1A and B, and I just heard our Chief Director say here, and C. C also refers to the committal of a crime. Whether it be to sustain his habit or not, he has still committed a crime. And why are we making special provision for those people? For my part, I think that the provision should be made for A and B only. But the moment you get to C, where there is a crime that has now been committed, then that person needs to be dealt with separately and differently to those people who are a threat to themselves or a threat to society. And I think that's what the Deputy Minister is also alluding to, if I'm not wrong.
I think let's try and differentiate between an instance where, let's say this is your son or your daughter. You know that he or she steals things from your house. It's a crime to go and sell so that he or she can finance the habit. But as a parent, you are deciding not to go and lay charges, but you are going to make a sworn statement to say this person is committing crime to finance the habit. We are not saying it's a criminal, there's no criminal investigation against that person, but you are only saying because he's doing the following that are listed in 29.1A up to C, you are not saying you want the court to issue an order for this person to be apprehended so that he can then be taken to a treatment center. But if this person commits a crime and you go and report that this person has committed a criminal offense, you will treat this person differently because the intention is to report a criminal offense and not to report the fact that this person is abusing a substance and therefore must be taken to a treatment center.
Does that answer you? Queen.
Chair, what is the situation in practice? If you call, if you go to a police station with your son or daughter and you say, this person has stolen from me, they will say that, do you want to lay a charge or don't you want to lay a charge? And only after you've laid a charge, you know, can you then request that they actually deal with it in terms of
out, because that is when it becomes their jurisdiction. They keep on saying to us they're not social workers. And if, yes,
I don't want to be there, but maybe I know the deputy minister indicated that she may not have read the bill. But if you read clause 29.1, it actually indicates out the whole thing before you then move to A, B, and C. So maybe if ma'am could just look at that and see to clarify your doubts.
Because one of 29, because one A. It. At what part of
29?
We've gone back to 29.1.
So that is okay.
What's the hiccup there? Is the CDA?
Sorry, my concern, Chair, is the fact that this C might be used by a parent in order to minimise the effect of a person having committed a crime and then pleading that this person is doing it only to sustain, and it might have been a serious crime, and they're going to then plead that, sorry, you can't treat him as an ordinary criminal because all he's doing is trying to sustain his habit, and they're asking for special dispensation for that, and that is my concern. And I think that it might be manipulated very easily by those type of parents who are aiding and at the end of the day would be seen to be aiding and abetting at the end of the day, or being manipulated by the situation. And that is my concern. If we're going to give an out clause for people to say, treat him differently because he's only supporting his habit, he's not really a criminal, irrespective of how serious the crime might be, they are going to plead that that was the situation. And I think that that might shoot us in the foot at the end of the day.
Thank you, sir. I think I would rather advise that we, you know, if you look at 29 and then you go and look at clause 31, it actually suggests that there's going to be an inquiry and the magistrate must make a ruling as to whether or not this is the person who is been referred to in clause 29.1. But for example, it does not mean that a person who may have committed an offence somewhere else may not be arrested, because if this person steals from me, I can go and report a criminal offence. But this thing is talking about an instance where I or a social worker or anybody closely related to that person wants to help this person, and he goes to a prosecutor to request that someone be issued for this person to be arrested so that this person can be, I'm using arrested as it is currently with it, so that this person can then be referred to a treatment centre. But I do not think it will preclude anybody from reporting a criminal offence if this person may have stolen from such a person.
And in any case, any representation made by the members of the family, the safety valve is the magistrate still has to make a decision. So as far as I'm concerned, that takes care of your concern. Please do.
Thank you, Chair. In some cases, it looks as if at the ground level, the people are not informed of all these regulations we are making, because children who are living in the street are substance abusers, most of them, actually all of them, because they sniff glue, they sniff whatever thing's wrong. But the police, normally when they pick them up from the street, they are never taken to a treatment center. They take them and drop them at the street shelter. And they're going to stay there for a few days and run again to the street to the same level of drug abuse. So I think more information should be sent to the people at the ground. Because even families of the member, if he's arrested because they're drug abuser, the family normally says, no, we are happy that he's in the cell. They don't know that they must go and negotiate that he must be taken to treatment center. So I think we're still lying with the problem there. Thanks.
Colleagues?
Thank
comment on the concerns?
On the question raised by the honourable member, what would happen is that if you are arrested and taken to a police cell and you are then found guilty, the magistrate can still, instead of sentencing you to imprisonment, can say, take this person for treatment at a treatment center as part of the sentence. And I think that is in clause. I think it was in clause 32. So if that person was arrested and found guilty, then the magistrate can then decide whether or not to refer this person to a treatment center or to an effective imprisonment or in other centers.
Thank you, Chair. But that's only once this bill has been passed. As the situation now, Mama Robi is describing, is this is why we're actually dealing with this legislation, is to prevent that kind of situation rising, because without this legislation, it's not going to happen.
I'd like to say Mama Robi's concern is, even after passing this bill, we must find channels to let the information filter down to the men in the street, even the police, so they can be assisted to deal, what shall I say, humanely with such cases. Not that one condones crime, but there's a reason for the committal of crime.
The Children's Act now includes that children working on the street are defined as children in need of care. So I'm not sure if that's the section there, the section 30, but it says section 152 apply for the changes required by the context in respect of the admission and transfer of a child to a treatment center. So that may be.
Anyway, we take note of the concerns that are expressed, and once this bill goes through, we come back here and strategize as to how we as a committee will motivate the action to inform people on the ground. Anything else under 31?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just in light of some of the concerns raised here, I think just to throw a concept in that needs to be kept in mind, is you hear it quite often, is what about the concerns of the victim of this crime? When we're talking about theft here, I mean, the victim of the crime could also be a bereaved person, because it could have been murder or something in that line. And there's no provision here where submission may be given to that magistrate from the victim of the crime. And I know there are certain policy directions in that line. So whilst we consider whether this is an appropriate mechanism, I just maybe think of that part to see if we should include something like that. Thanks, Matt. What I'm reading here, if we go to sub 7, that's now 31.7, it appears to me that the magistrate will now consider all the evidence placed before him or her, and then if the magistrate is of that opinion that the person is the same person referred to in 29.1, and that is now a person who committed a crime to sustain his or her dependency, then you have the referral out of the criminal justice system. But it's just what I'm seeing there is that there's no valve, so to speak, for the victim of the crime to submit something to the magistrate to influence the decision of the magistrate. So I would suggest that if maybe just an additional clause, if one say, should this person fall within 29.1c, the victim of the crime maybe should be given an opportunity to address the magistrate as well before coming to.
something in that line. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. But it is a bit of a policy issue, so I'm just sort of saying it while also deferring it to the policy makers on this one. But I don't think we should just let that slip out of our radar, out of our vision, because that will come back and come back to the legislature to say, and this is a media line, I'm not saying it's true, but there's always a media line that the criminals have all the rights, but the victims don't have any rights. So one needs to keep that in mind and come up with a balanced approach.
I'm certainly not the legal beagle, but would that not be covered in two, where the prosecutor or other person may call witnesses to give evidence at the inquiry and may cross-examine such witnesses? Would that not give an opportunity there for the person who's been?
Sounds like it.
It does. I mean, it's within the domain of the public prosecutor there then to call the victim. But one must remember here that the public prosecutor who was approached firstly by those who are concerned about the user. And then the public prosecutor asked the clerk to issue a summons to get that user before the magistrate. Now, what does the public prosecutor want to do? What's the role of the public prosecutor here? I think the public prosecutor is not necessarily now busy prosecuting that person. The impression I'm getting is the public prosecutor is going to submit further evidence to the magistrate to show the magistrate that this person is or isn't the person contemplated in section 29(1)(a)(c). It's almost as if the prosecutor's role there is to assist the magistrate to make a determination whether this person is a user and should be deferred out of the criminal justice system. So if two covers that, I think maybe just a specific reference which says he must call the victim of the crime to testify. Or he may, and not may, we don't want may, we want to say must, and of course the victim can refuse to say, I don't want to testify. You can be summoned, but you can. It will create a strange situation, because if you must be called to testify, it means that the summons must be issued for you to appear at that inquiry. And you might not want to, as a victim. Some victims go into denial and they don't want to be faced with this whole trauma of looking at the perpetrator again. So I'll agree with the Honourable Member that two covers it, but I would add that to an extent, not fully. So,
you know,
somewhere else is of the view that you you committed an offense and they report an offense, you can also be tried and you could fall under section 30 plus 32, which says, let's say now it's my son again, now somebody reported an offense, my son went to court, my son was found guilty. The magistrate can still, even at that stage, to decide that instead of sentencing me to imprisonment, he or she is going to send me to a treatment center. So it does not really mean that we are decriminalizing the conduct by trying to refer a person to a treatment center.
I'm sure you've made a lot more progress in my life. Four clauses, excellent. We are at clause 32. Researcher, can you take us through?
Yes, sir. There is the submission from Arasa. It submits that clause 32, subclause 3A, fails to acknowledge the chronic and the lasting nature of addiction disease. It therefore proposes that clause 32.3a be followed by the following provision. Provided that relapse to substance abuse does not automatically constitute a violation of the sentencing terms. In addition, it proposes the addition of the following new clause, 32.3c, which reads, before making a determination in respect of any possible violation of sentencing terms, a court must be satisfied that a person described in subsection A, particularly a person who relapses and resumes his or her drug use, has been assessed by a qualified health professional with experience in addiction medicine and has been ruled out for further treatment, including harm reduction and or support services as described in section 22 and 27 of this act. That's all, Chair.
All right. Any comments from the department in that regard? Remember, you don't have the right not to comment. Or at least not to have a response.
I thought you were saying that people who are running treatment centers would be professionals who would know whether or not a person would, whether or not this person is a suitable person for that treatment, if they think that this person cannot be treated. I don't think it, we need to refer them to refer these people somewhere else, because these are the people who are experts in the area. They have tried to treat this person, and they at the end felt like this person is not a suitable person for treatment. So I'm not sure whether it makes any difference when you say this person must be assessed by someone else, unless it's for the purpose of a second opinion. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I'm reading in this section is that they are saying that we should make provision for the relapsing nature of addiction. And I don't understand why we should do it. If you've committed a criminal offense and you've been referred to a treatment center and later found not to be, you know, fit for treatment, but a treatment center for whatever reason, whether it's a result, a relapse or what, shouldn't you then be taken for criminal procedure, you know, through the criminal procedure process, rather than making provision for relapse? Because the whole idea in here is to make sure that the people take responsibility, you know, for their drug addictions and comply with the provisions of the, you know, with whatever order that the magistrate has issued. I'm not sure whether it would be sensible to actually accommodate the issue of relapse.
Paul, you wanted to say something.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I think, you know, we've been told that in fact you can never really be cured of substance abuse. I mean, you can become clean for a certain amount of time, which it's something that might always be with you. So I can't see, I'm not referring to the second part of this proposal, but the first one about the provided that relapse to substance abuse does not automatically constitute a violation of the sentencing terms. I mean, I don't think any magistrate would say you sentence on condition that you never go back to being a substance abuser. I think it's really quite strange. I don't know, but I don't see the sense of it at all.
I think what can happen is, for example, the person is in a treatment center as a result of a court order. The person maybe then comes home, visits, and then has a relapse and doesn't come back. But insofar as the person doesn't go back to the treatment center, the family can then again, you know, go to the police and say, look, this person is in. And that is made provision for. So I think that this is really an ideological thing that's within this particular submission.
Well, what is the ultimate? Is this proposal by Arafa being rejected? I'm not sure if I understood what they're asking for. What the purpose for, what change we are effecting. Ms. Sample, can you explain it to me in simple English? What you understand of what they're asking us?
Well, Chair, I don't think that I understood it either. I'm not sure.
I see they're talking about addiction disease. They wanted to see that this is a medical condition and must be treated in a medical way and not in a social way. There's a whole lot of things that goes with their position, their harm reduction approach. And they want to force this approach into the thought. So, you know, therefore they want it to be treated like addiction, to be treated like a disease, and they don't see that it's, I don't see that it's relevant here, actually.
Just on that, Deputy Minister, we've tried very hard to keep the word addiction out of this bill, because then we get left with a whole lot of other types of addictions which don't necessarily relate to substance abuse. So So I don't think we want to go down the route of addiction disease at all, as far as social development is concerned.
You know, Chairperson, what I'm reading out of this? Remember, this person has been convicted by a court in lieu of any sentence in respect of the particular offense. Now, that person is then referred to a treatment center. But they get to the treatment center and make it, perhaps, as an example, impossible. For, because, remember, they are involuntary patients. They don't want to participate in this. And anything can happen that might prevent the treatment center from actually running with the program of rehabilitation. That person can then be referred back to the court so that they then continue with their normal sentence. You know, the court can then decide on what sentence, what for the, you know, what sentence to give for the crime they have committed. Because if you don't comply with the provisions of the provisions that are made by, for your rehabilitation, then the remedies kick in automatically. Now, what Arasa is saying is that the reason that they have this whole issue, or the excuse that would be given, for instance, for people not to comply, would be that addiction is, they relapse, people relapse. So even if a person doesn't comply with the conditions of the court and relapses and still continues to use drugs, that must be taken into consideration. And somebody else who is a mental health specialist or qualified healthcare professional should actually do an assessment of that particular person. For what reason, I am not sure. So that they don't have to go back. And I don't see the sense of it, Jay, because otherwise it defeats the whole purpose of the magistrate sentencing you to a drug treatment center in lieu of a prison sentence or a fine or whatever.
Look, my understanding is that there are people who, according to Arasa, are beyond salvation in terms through, well, sorry, beyond treatment. Well, I'm becoming religious. Ultimately, everybody might be beyond treatment, but they're still not beyond salvation. Lord have mercy. And that, now what I want to understand is, so in this instance, inevitably they will not be in compliance with whatever conditions, in terms of which, call it the diversion that the court has decided on to a treatment center as opposed to a prison. So I'm not sure what they then are proposing should happen to this person, or the court should do with the person. Is it, what exactly is it proposing? Yeah. Because the section in the Criminal Procedure Act, the B part there, might just give us a sense of what happens in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. I suppose the person then gets sentenced to a prison or something, probably. Yes, Mr. Vivius, you are the expert on probation services.
Not probation services, but I've been working with patients being referred to in terms of Section 296 of the Criminal Procedure Act, and usually it's a sentence, it's an option to send them rather for rehabilitation, but you do find quite a number of these patients seeing that as an earlier option than to imprisonment. And some of these guys are coming into such a program with totally the wrong attitude. They don't want to participate. They're very obstructive. And I really think in the interest of the treatment center and the other patients, these guys should actually be referred back to court and say, but there's absolutely no cooperation whatsoever from these guys coming in the treatment program. The court gave him the opportunity to do something about the addiction problem, but they're definitely not interested. And I think it should be dealt in such a way that the court must understand that what are some of the realities that they are faced with.
What does Section 296 actually then say the court must do with this person?
Well, normally, first of all, I must say to you that in practice it was always quite difficult to convince the courts to reopen these cases again. We usually have to compile a report and make recommendations that the law must just
take its course,
you know, because this guy, he was making out a case that he got a drug problem and would like to become rehabilitated, and when they gave an opportunity, of course, he messed it up, then the justice not just...
Are we trying to indirectly amend Section 276?
No, I'm just trying to share with you some of the experiences. Now, I think because Arata is sort of saying that we should bear in mind this people got addiction problem and relapses and these kind of things may occur and it's part of the package. But I just wanted to say the other side of the coin is that some of these guys are really not interested and are actually abusing these kind of opportunities.
I've not read the whole of 276A, but basically it refers to conversion of sentence, where a particular sentence was imposed, you can actually come back to court and the sentence can be converted. You'll remember that in this instance, this person would have been sent to a treatment center instead of being sentenced to imprisonment. Now that a decision would have been made that this person is not fit for treatment in a treatment center, this person would then be referred back for that sentence to be converted. And I think then, at that stage, an appropriate sentence will be determined.
I think it's becoming clearer that if the person is not complying with the treatment for whatever reason, whether he's had a relapse or he's being uncooperative or she is, whatever it is, then the alternative sentencing must take its course. And I just think that Arata has got it wrong here in that saying that relapse to substance abuse does not automatically constitute a violation of sentencing terms. Well, I don't think anyone's saying that. I mean, I don't think anyone's saying that, you know, if you go back to your habits, then you are not complying with the terms of your sentence. I just think that they... What is
you
it?
Are.
What the sentence is?
We don't know what the sentence is saying.
Relapsed, it means that you've actually absconded from the treatment center, because while you're in the treatment center, you won't be having access to drugs.
Well, we have just been told, yes, look, look, one of the inputs that came from, what's the organization, SMART, yesterday, was that one way in which the harm reduction process has entailed has been to gradually scale down a person's dosage to a point where that person can become completely capable of functioning without the substance, you know, in a controlled way with doctors involved and so on. I know at one level there's controversy around that, but that whole process, according to health, it's something that they're already at the practical level working with, all right, where they actually use things like substitute drugs, so the whole process of winning off the person of the drug is something that actually is a method of treatment that's actually if you know, the sentence is likely to say or to prescribe the manner in which treatment is supposed to occur. If this thing happens within the context of the treatment, legitimate treatment in terms of whatever system that regulates this treatment, I don't know much about what happens with this treatment, then that person technically is most unlikely to be in violation, because how does the court set conditions that defeat the very treatment process itself? So it won't be a relapse per se. That person will be working with whoever is the therapist that's teaching them, who would be determining, you know, all the medical details and so on, which is a professional area of competence. As long as it's being done in terms of a healthcare system that the Department of Health is responsible for, and is satisfied that they're handling the situation, then why should we be bothered with social development? Right? So all this detail about whether if it's a violation of the conditions of the sentence, then it's a violation of the conditions of the sentence, and it's up to the court to decide how to deal with the situation. And then secondly, it's up to whoever is advising the court on an appropriate course of action to make sure that the order provides all the elements that are necessary for an appropriate referral, so that you don't end up with a self-defeating order that is a non-starter from the very beginning. Yeah, I think what they're asking is for something to push it a little further, to say the court must then be considerate of the fact that you could be dealing with somebody who has a much more harder situation to deal with. But I think all of that is the kind of detail which the court, in reassessing based on the transgression, can always take. The court is not a child, it also has a brain, so it would take into account all the circumstances and the input from the therapist and all of that. That would in any case have informed their decision to refer the person as opposed to sentencing them. So I don't think it's an issue. That's how I see it.
Agreed, Chair.
Right. We must satisfy ourselves that we have applied our mind to all issues raised by members of the public who are not here to further motivate their point. So we must motivate, we must be the devil's advocate on their behalf. Right. 34. Are we 34?
33.
Oh, only 33. Oh, okay.
There are no submissions for 33.
All right, Ms. Sample.
Chair, just the heading. I think it's inquiry with an E, not an I. Court may order an inquiry.
That's English not allowing for both spellings.
Chair, why is the department using inquiry in the paragraph afterwards? Let's be consistent.
But if the two words are exactly identical, does it make a difference?
How do we ask for consistency in these things then? Language use.
I don't mind, as long as the spell checker says you're correct in both instances and the meaning is the same. As long as it's South African English. Alright. Okay, anything else with 33? Nothing else with regard to 33.
Thank you.
floor, Chair. The submission from the South African Committee of Human Rights, it raises concern in cases where the presiding officer may make incorrect decision about the age of a person. That would violate a child's rights. It also questions whether a presiding officer has the sufficient skills to make a decision as to a young person's age. It therefore proposes that a medical officer assists in determining the person's age. That's all, Chair.
All right. Department, you want to react? Yeah? Chief Director.
It might be helpful to refer to the Children's Act in this case, because that's where the provision is also made for age estimation of a child. And my papers are all over the place. And I'll look for the section just now, Chair.
Wasn't the formulation here based on taking cue from that particular provision? Or for that matter, a similar provision in other laws? No, we're just checking if there's anything else we want to raise. Yes?
I'm not sure whether this only, it does not seem to only refer to children. It refers to persons. But I also thought maybe we should qualify it to say only for the purpose of this end. Because it's only for if you want to determine, so let's say it's a child, for instance. But you are not sure of the age, so that you must determine how you want to treat this person. Maybe if we say for the purpose of this act, we can then estimate the age as we indicate here, without necessarily saying that is your acceptable age wherever you go, but only for the purpose of determining whether or not, I mean, how old are you, if that is an issue.
Well, it's already been said, because it starts by saying 34, whenever in connection with any proceedings in terms of this act, all right, the age of a person is a relevant fact. So it's already anchored there, on which no or insufficient evidence is available. Yeah?
It's my ignorance, but if it's got nothing to, if it's going broader than just deciding whether the person is the age of a child or not, what else would be the relevance of finding, of determining how old the person is? I'm just not quite sure why it wouldn't just be referring to children.
Well, we
are you saying that if you get to the age of 60 you don't deserve treatment, or what?
Well, it doesn't do harm to keep it like that and leave it to the proceedings and the context in which the matter arises. Do we have to crack our heads now and work out whether it could only relate?
We have to determine this anyway, and it's to determine whether the person is a child or not. We don't have any other provisions in terms of age.
But
and how would a medical officer be able to determine the precise age of a person?
No, let's not split hairs. I think this is what WHO is promoting. Wait, let's first hear Mr. Kalamudin. What have you got to say to us?
I'm responding to the question raised by Honorable Circle, the purpose of determining the age of a person. I don't think it's for the purpose of admitting these people in treatment centers, like in a case whereby a treatment center caters for both adults and children, so that you may be able to
saying, could it be the only purpose? Shouldn't it be left to the court in given circumstances to decide whether it is necessary to determine the age or not? It might not even be necessary to determine whether this person is a child or not. Well, of course, it would be necessary in all instances first to determine whether this person is a child or not. Couldn't we possibly want to know if this person is an older person for purposes of appropriate services for that person? Suppose we're only making special provision for children, but we're not making provision for any other vulnerable person. But to me, neither here nor there. It doesn't matter. Does it? The sky will not fall. The sky will not fall. So why don't we just let it go? Sorry, let me hear you. Talk to me. You're not using your microphone.
I'm saying I can't find it. It doesn't seem to be it. The issue of age estimation.
The issue of what?
Age estimation.
You can't find it where?
In the children's room.
Yes?
It's on section 482 of the Children's Act. It basically says a children's court may, for the purpose of this act, estimate the age of a person who appears to be a child in the prescribed manner. So there's a manner in which you... But this one is only specific to children. When here, it does not necessarily apply to children.
So my simple question is that we need to spend a lot of time on this. The sky will not fall.
We just put in the reference to the Children's Act serving the age of a child, and that's it. Is that what we're interested in, to see whether you're going to treatment of sex
but
for
the
children?
But the Children's Act is determining a child, an age of the child in relation to proceedings before a children's court.
Okay.
And this is not proceedings in a children's court.
Well, I don't see why we need to have a whole treatment
of age. So we don't need cross-referencing. We just simply need to decide what we want to say in this act. And as far as I'm concerned, what is being said here is sufficient. They're creating a system, determining an age of the child in relation to proceedings in terms of this act. Yeah. Cross-reference what? Cross-reference the Children's Act. Why must we? Use your mic. Sorry.
The Children's Act applies in the case of children. So...
But that clause probably relates to children that are before a children's court, is it not?
Okay.
Now, this child is not before a children's court. This person is before an inquiry in terms of this act. Might be in a children's court, might be in some other court. But that's not the issue. The issue is that we want to create an enabling provision for the presiding officer to determine the age of the child, or to determine the age of the person, if it is necessary. I think I'm going to really miss Sample to be raising an issue that is not neither here nor there. Department have put it that way. I think they're erring on the side of caution, and I support them. Right. We resolve, but there's the other issue. What was the other issue? The age has been determined, but there was something else. That was raised by this organization, by the doctor. The involvement of the doctor, medical officer. issue here.
Chair, is that whether or not the presiding officer would be capable of estimating the age of a child, and that instead of saying a medical, a presiding officer must estimate the child, they are suggesting that a medical practitioner should be the one to do so. Not the child, the age, estimation of the age.
Yeah, Kala. I suppose their concern is why, say, the legal, the presiding officer should have the power to estimate, as opposed to leaving it entirely in all instances to a medical practitioner. I mean, there are certain people that really look young, and they are not young at all, and vice versa. And me, being the presiding officer with no medical background, the moment they walk through there, I'm going to say, oh, that's an 8-year-old. Well, in the meantime, that person is a 19-year-old. So I think my understanding is that they're saying that in all instances, the medical practitioner must determine it. All right. Children's Act doesn't help us because it refers us to the regulations. I don't know why we decided to put that in the regulations. But maybe we're lazy at that time, weren't it, to defer this thing for some later process. I think it was the middle of the night and we were tired of formulation of stuff. But is there a problem with simply saying the presiding officer with the advice of a medical practitioner or something of that nature? Wait, let me first hear the state law advice after silence of an entire day. Finally, we're getting to hear the voice of the Office of the State Law Advisor. Let's hear you.
Chair, I just want to say that other legislation does provide for assessment of age by medical doctor, and if you look at even the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act, there's even a form, the regulations provide a form which the medical officer needs to complete for the determination of the age. So I think maybe we should stick to that and not, duplicate it. But I think it's also within the expertise of a medical practitioner. So it's really provided for other legislation for a medical practitioner to assess the age, whereas like the Recognition of Customary Marriages Act provides for a medical officer in the service of the state, but I'm sure it can be any medical officer. Maybe we can just try and mirror therefore for the regulations for this act.
Should we say that the presiding officer must determine with the advice of the medical officer, or should we say the medical officer
medical officer determines the age? Then obviously they submit that determination to the presiding officer, but the discretion should be with the medical officer itself.
Right. So we take it outside of the judicial process and we make it an administrative or a professional decision purely of the medical officer. All right.
What would happen is that a social worker would also be advise the presiding officer, and whatever report that is submitted to them would advise based on the investigation that they would have done, maybe interviews with relatives and what have you, be able to do that. So I'm just thinking, in practice, here am I with this child from somewhere, Chairperson. Now I've got to go and find the medical practitioner or a medical officer just to estimate the child, age of their child, and then go back to the court. I don't know whether
we
can manage this with our system.
I don't think it would be a problem.
leave it with the presiding officer, who takes into account the advice of the medical practitioner. And may, we could even say the presiding officer determines and may require the opinion of the medical practitioner. I mean, it may well be that the presiding officer feels that there's sufficient circumstantial evidence to confirm the age of the child, of the person, and that there's no need in his opinion for an adverse costly exercise of referring, of deferring the decision pending a medical officer being found. If a social worker's report, for example, provides sufficient evidence as to the age of the person, even though there might not be an idea of that certificate, the presiding officer might just feel there's no need to go and estimate and actually determine or estimate the age, because it can be estimated based on that evidence. So you say the presiding officer would determine the age and may take into account any evidence provided, any age estimation provided by a medical practitioner or something of that nature. Is there anybody who has difficulty with that? Chief state law advisor. I saw your head shaking.
The recognition of custom marriages has a very simple process. It's not cumbersome, it's simple.
What does it say?
It basically provides for a request if the presiding officer or even needs to request, they just complete a form which is quite simple. It's straightforward, very brief, a one-page form. And then the medical practitioner provides an assessment. It's a pro forma form, so they just tick off whatever they feel they need. And based on that scientific evidence, they produce an assessment. And this also creates uniformity and consistency in law because it's already provided elsewhere. And that's just my story.
So we want to harmonize our systems. All right, I'll live with that. For the sake of progress as well. All right, you'll bring that formulation and that will be it. Okay? Cut of the tapestry. Yes, madam. Have we not defined it in the definition section? Did we define the Director General for Health in the definition section? Of health. We may need to, depending on what health comes back in response, but if we're using Director General of Health, by the way, in respect of the parliament, we'll need to define the Director General of Health. All right, fine. Yeah, if we're using medical practitioner, let's define medical practitioner in terms of the relevant legislation governing that. Yes.
I thought it would not be necessary to define the Director General of the Department of Health when we specifically mentioned the Director General of the National Department of Health.
Did we say the Director General of the National Department of Health in the Act, in the bill?
The Department of Health.
Which Department of Health? Because could mean?
One can say National Department of Health.
Did say? Of the National Department of Health. Because that might mean both the National Director General as well as the Provincial Director General. Hello? This is the prerogative of a province to determine who has including the delegation of his powers to provinces, if need be, in terms of health or arrangement. And not just leave it as open as it is now, because then it means it's only in terms of this act and in terms of no other law. That's a problem. But we've dealt with that issue before now, so we don't have to rehash it. The secretary tells me that he is there. Have we finished 34 estimation of age? So we'll resume with 35 after tea. 5 minute break. We're beginning at 6 so that parties who have study groups, they can go into their study groups, and we'll then be resuming, well, we're going to resume now after tea, but we're going to be resuming after today, 6 o'clock tomorrow, after caucuses. What time are we resuming tomorrow?
It
didn't. Were we not?
No,
they didn't give us permission.
much from a Jamaica fellow.
Of age
became a problem, and it was handled there by officers and some of us asking relevant questions. So you are more or less, you can more or less establish how old the boy or girl may be, how old the person is. So these trimmings about finding somebody who's going to keep you there for the whole day, there's enough waiting at hospitals. There are so many cases that have to be postponed, and I think we shouldn't go out of our way to complicate things even further. Make it as easy and as accessible as possible. Looking for these highly qualified people, looking for on a day, looking for a needle in a haystack. So personally, I think we must use the experience of the officiating officers with the help of social workers. It's easy. I've done it before. So I'm not talking about things I haven't done myself.
It seems to me that the formulation as it stands does it, because it's up to the presiding officer whether he or she feels they're up to the task, or if they feel that they'd rather not do it themselves, then they'll call up the assistance of a medical practitioner. So it's an either-or situation, and it's in their discretion. Are we comfortable with settling for this? We'll overrule the state guidelines. All right. Clause 35.
I can just indicate that there are no submissions until clause 41.
All right. So let's deal with the clause 35. Postponement of order. Anybody who wants to raise any matter in relation to the clause?
Correctional services officials who were here indicated that we should not use the word prison but rather use correctional facility.
But the act itself,
the act
first
makes reference to prison.
And that aspect has not been amended.
Yeah, the possibility that the word correctional facility is used in the white paper or some strategy document, but it's not yet part of the act.
All right. Point made. Yes, Honorable Demande.
Chair, I think I'm not sure, as the Chief Director himself is not sure in terms of whether there is any dispensation created in policy or the legislation. But I thought, Chair, we said that the principle that would guide this bill, I think the expressions were made were that it should be more on correctional and rehabilitation, the emphasis and so on. So I would say, Chair, if it doesn't do any harm, and this committee is, as you know, Chair, it's known to usher in new things that are appropriate and relevant. We did that with the children's bill, all the bills, so we know. So we don't have to comply with things when we even see that we're not going that direction anymore. And of course, they're calling themselves correctional services. And so I'm not sure it's, that would be very wrong to stick with that as such. Of course, Chair, I see. The police self. I think we. I'm not sure, Chair, if we do away with that as the police that was presenting here. What are we saying then instead? What is the reality? What Madireko is talking about? What's the reality on the ground at this stage? We don't want them to be in the cells, but I think that might be the reality, that the magistrate has no option in when we have to keep such a person, except because the centers are not there, the suitable places, you know, they're not there. So I'm not too sure, Chair, whether we just have to cut the police off. I think it's something we need to apply our minds on. Thanks, Chair.
Currently, is it not possible? Well, aren't all persons who get arrested immediately taken to a police station and, if need be, incarcerated in a police cell, even if for a short duration? So what is the issue?
I think you're right, and especially in view of the fact that you don't have treatment facilities in all communities, in all our communities. And I think whilst, yes, maybe the CDA can assist us in terms of, because the whole issue around these police as well, and of course, yeah, maybe I need to indicate as well that corrections also said that they don't have facilities for temporary custody. But Chair, if there's nothing else in that community, there's no treatment facility in that community, what happens then to that person? The risk is, I think, that the issue is about the time that would be required for a person to experience, or the time that a person, that it would take for a person to experience withdrawal symptoms. Because the main thing that they were worried about is that what happens in that case, let's say that person is abusing alcohol, and that person is then removed and then put in a police cell, the withdrawal symptoms can be very deadly, and I'm not sure over what period of time that would apply in order to make it at least reasonable. Because the other option, the option that they provided was the hospital, that the hospital has got better facilities for people to be taken care of for detoxification. That's what they said.
Aren't we actually dealing with specific stage here? A magistrate holding an inquiry contemplated would have determined the appropriate placement for that person. But that person has just been brought in, has been arrested, was in a police cell for that matter. Should we exclude taking that person back to the police cell as one of the options at the disposal of the magistrate? I guess the police are just trying to remove, everybody's trying to remove the problem as far as possible away from themselves. Health is the other extreme. It wants to take full control and hands off to everybody else. You guys know nothing about this thing. We are better placed to deal with this thing, so hands off. All right. Yes, Chief.
No, this the issue that has been raised there was informed by the fact that we were saying the police cells would not be appropriate venues for holding people who are abusing substances because of the withdrawal symptoms. Now, even in this case, under 36, if the magistrate decides to adjourn the matter for 5 days, for example, because it can't even take for more than 5 days, what are we going to be doing? Are we saying this person must be kept in the police cells, even if they are going to be withdrawal symptoms? Because I thought that was the whole rationale behind this, saying the police cells would not be an appropriate venue, and even the correctional services people indicated that they do not have the capacity to deal with people who have withdrawal symptoms.
Let's call up practical experience. Mr. Pierre Vivier, what happens in practice?
Chairperson, it's a given that I think putting the person in police cell is most undesirable, and we need to try and avoid it as far as possible. But I also heard what the Chief Director of Health Services was saying, that in certain cases you have no choice. But maybe as part of this list, we should maybe include hospital as one of the places where the person can be kept, especially if detoxification is necessary. And then also the person, if under certain circumstances, he can remain at home. If he's sober and he's not causing havoc, why do we have to lock this person up or keep him in custody? He could maybe perhaps stay at home till removal to a treatment center.
Yes, because we need to mention all these options so that the magistrate has them. Because
yeah.
If we leave out an option, then the magistrate doesn't have the option. Mm-hmm. It's Holland mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Any other place regarded by the magistrate as suitable?
It's broad enough to can take him back to the police cell anyway. All right. Yes.
Okay. Can we at least have an head hospital and then any other place?
A head?
Head. What do we call them? The legislation calls them on? Huh? Health establishment. That's the correct. The definition of health establishment, you've just looked it up now.
Yeah. All right.
It covers private, public, and clinic, and everything else.
Uh-huh. All right. CDA?
Mr. Chair, just to say that I think that is even more important, more appropriate. I'm not too sure how many of the public or private treatment centers, public or private halfway houses, would be capable of dealing with a patient who is going through withdrawal as well. So it's more pertinent to say that they should be at a healthcare facility. Those type of establishments. Because an ordinary halfway house, for example, would not be able to deal as much as what the police cells would be able to deal with the person going to withdraw.
All right. Well, at least we know they can sedate him in a hospital, get him under control. Okay. Healthcare facility, should we say designated? In terms of that other story.
Yeah, I was going to ask about
we just picked it up after the discussion. Because,
okay.
And I think it would be more appropriate to actually talk about health establishment, because health establishment is defined in the National Health Act.
But the interesting thing was you said the health establishment is a public or a private.
It is public or private.
So does that answer our concern on 28.4?
Anything, any reference, let's conclude this, any reference to health will be conveyed to health. So that health occurs. You see, we're making this legislation in conjunction with the Department of Health. All right, okay. We'll include that in the letter. Okay, and we'll simply say the implication of being certain about the appropriate terminology is that it has implications in respect of other areas that amendments may be affected, such as this clause, where the inclusion of a health establishment seems to be one of the imperatives.
Okay, are we also going to change the prison?
Honourable Zimande seems to have provided us guidance. What were you proposing? That we stick with correctional, we take correctional facilities, or we stick with prison? Correctional facility. Yeah, correctional facility established in terms of. And there is no such. How are going to do that?
Yes.
Why does correctional services take it upon themselves to fix their law?
That's what I'm saying. If you want to make references.
No, but in the process we're providing something that doesn't exist.
They still use the word prisoner in their act. No, there's a correctional officer.
Yeah, I mean, policy doesn't help. Policy may be progressive and so on. We're not into policy writing. We're into law writing here. Even if there is policy, we are not dealing with policy. We're dealing with law. And the law must be precise. It's easy to use fancy language when you write policy. You can write anything you like in policy. But when you write law, precision is of utmost importance. You have no choice, actually, in the matter. That's why we still refer to the Transvaal Provincial Division of the High Court. Absurd as it may be, that is the law. Until that is fixed in the law, we have no choice. It's safe. Unless somebody satisfies us that the law has changed, to use more progressive language. So they must come back to us and tell us which law are they referring us to when they say a correctional facility. And if they can show us the law, we can give it to them. It's as simple as that. All right. Let's proceed. Clause, the next. Please proceed, researcher.
There are no submissions to a clause.
Oh, yes. The deserver. What is it? This is appeal. Who raised the issue of appeal? Oh, that is in relation to order. Any person who has any gripe with appeal? The formulation is, are the legal experts satisfied? Do they take care of accurately reflect how the law should look like? Or did we take the shortcut? specified through the formulation of the clause system. In any case, the agreement was that insofar as children are concerned and the relationship between the provisions of this Act and the provisions of the Children's Act, the harmonization and the synergization and the synchronization of the relevant provisions of both Acts is something that you would need to look at holistically in relation to the continuum of services provided both in this Act and that Act. It's a matter of refinement so that the transversality, which for example this clause is to achieve, this paragraph, this
and looking at the practice situation. And what the Children's Health says that a child and youth care center, it divides them into different categories, one of which is a substance abuse treatment center type of child and youth care facility. Now, I'm just looking at what it exactly means, whether it means what I'm saying now, in terms of any child and youth care center becoming a rehabilitation, or rather a substance abuse treatment center. Or are we saying there would be designated child and youth care centers that may be, for instance, attached to a treatment center? And
that
kind of specialist attention that would be provided by the treatment center, rather than taking a child to any child and youth care center, which in the end might not have the necessary expertise to deal with a child who is abusing substances.
We're saying one thing. We're saying sort it out. That's all we're saying.
Chairperson, we need guidance. I think Chairperson said exactly what is it that you're saying. Because from what you said earlier, it was a question of us making that kind of reference, and you're saying that
cross-referencing. Yeah,
cross-referencing. And it seemed as if that if a child plays in a youth care center, any youth care center, it can be provided as appropriate for children who have got substance abuse problems. And I think
fundamentally you can create a treatment center in terms of this act, which has the competence to provide a service to the younger generation called children. Equally, you can create a child and youth care center whose primary designation is that of being a child and youth care center. But in that child and youth care center, create an enabling arrangement for it to also receive and deal with children who have abuse problems change the site of the school, primarily. All right. So all we said is that there should be this element of transversality between the child protection system and the substance treatment system, and making sure that the needs of the children can be addressed in either, depending on what is best and most workable under the circumstances. So you're allowing for the possibility of both possibilities, and then you do the cross-referencing accordingly between the two systems, so that the children can readily flow between the two systems in a transversal way. The Children's Act has taken the initiative in anticipation. The Substance Abuse Bill was not before us when we passed that act, but we anticipated that something will be done when this bill is passed in relation to substance abuse where children are involved. And we found that the Child and Youth Care Centers should be enabled to be able to deal with those situations. I don't know if there's further clarity we need to provide here. I'll come to the Deputy Minister. Honourable Zimane?
Yes, Roger, you know, it's a pity. They promised that they were going to do a presentation. Busasa, is it?
Yeah.
And social development in the of in the Western Cape. They do have the I think the kind of facility that the chief director is talking about, which is a treatment center which has some detoxification services and that type of thing. And they are, I visited them with another committee. They seem to have indicated, for instance, the increase. This one in Eerste Rivier, for instance, has now have about 200 beds of youngsters. Below 18, which means that it is on the increase, the demand for treatment of these youngsters. I think I understand what you are saying, and I mean what we say here is that see, my fear, for instance, firstly, is that if we start to say designated now, practically, who's going to be building there those relevant and designing the child and youth care centers that would then be designated to be treatment centers as such that would be able to deal with this situation of children? So in a way, as you say, that the children's bill itself or the children's act itself, it covers it, or it gives some approaches to that, and it allows, I think, a framework for specialization within the program, for the social development. The head of the social development would be able to also be part of when approving on registration around the Children's Act, on approving the center to direct as they engage with the child and youth care centers or applicants for that service or for that program or facility as such. So I would think, as is now, for me, it does give the broadness that we would want in allowing people to specialize by the time they want to specialize, whether they're private or public, even government at some point, if it does have capacity and resources to build more of these treatment centers that are specializing, it does allow that. I think for me, it's not, for now, I would not be extremely alarmed by the formulation as such. Thanks, Chair.
All right. Director General, to the Deputy Minister. Yes.
Chair, 585B. If a child is placed in a child and youth care center, such a center must be regarded as a public or private treatment center for the purpose of this act. Now, as the members, honourable members said, I've also been to Bosasa in Eerste Rivier, and they who are placed by the magistrate or by the courts who are having substance abuse problems are the ones that cannot benefit from the program. So what they do with those children is they just lock them up. They just sit there in a locked room, which is really very inhuman. Now, this 5B is simply saying that if a child gets placed into a center, into a child and youth care center, then that center must be regarded as a private treatment center. It's not saying if a child is placed in a center, that center must ensure that the child gets access to treatment facility. So I think there's something wrong there because that's not the intention. It must rather say that such a child must get access because that child must then be assessed by the in a medical institution for mental illness because those children are hallucinating and all that as a result of taking TIP. They must, if detox is necessary, they must be detoxed. And that institution, BOSASA, must take the responsibility to take those children to the necessary, for the necessary treatment services that they require. But as it is at the moment, they just lock them up and they stay there in solitary confinement. And I've seen this for myself.
Clearly, for a treatment center in terms of this act to be a treatment center, it must comply with the provisions of this act. In terms of the services, in terms of the way it's run and all of those things. That's why we have this act. Now, to then say, in support of what the Deputy Minister is saying, that the mere fact that a child has been placed in a child and youth care center, that automatically that child and youth care center is deemed to be a treatment center might create the following problems. One, that child and youth care center might not be quite in compliance with the provisions of this act. What then? Are you then going to start bringing to bear the provisions of this act and burden that treatment, that child and youth care center with compliance orders? When in the first place it was never designed for that purpose. What do we mean by that? They lock up the child as the Deputy Minister has given us an example. You're definitely going to say they're in violation of this act. And you're going to take action against them. But it wasn't them who in the first place put themselves out. They never applied to be registered as a treatment center in terms of this act. They simply held themselves out as a child and youth care center. Now somebody decides to refer a child in terms of A. Alright? Director General in terms of A decides, contrary to the wisdom of the court, that we're going to take this child instead of taking the child to the treatment center, take the child to the child and youth care center. Once the child is in a child and youth care center, that center automatically is then defined as a treatment center because this child has been referred there. And now it's being burdened with the duty of having to comply with this act. What are we saying? Help us, Chief Director of Legal Services.
I'm trying to suggest something, but I may not have the correct and accurate phrasing. But while still on the same 1085A, would it make difference? The difference, if you were to say the Director General may, if he's satisfied that the Child and Youth Care Center meets all the requirements for registration as a treatment center, if you put that proviso, which then would mean that the Director General cannot just direct that you must go there, you must send a child to a Child and Youth Care Center and regard it as a treatment center in terms of this act. Unless he's satisfied that it meets all the requirements of registration as a treatment center, which, in my view, it would be that the responsible official would then would have to advise the Director General on whether or not such a treatment center, I mean, such a child and youth care center, is appropriate to be considered to be a treatment center in terms of this act?
Long and winded way of trying to do this, and it doesn't solve the problem. Yeah, Chief Director, Social Welfare
Services. I think there are two things for me. Maybe that we address this issue under the section that they should deal with in relation to I don't know what clause is it, the clause that you referred to, 102.
Clause 23.
I think it would be better if we dealt with this whole thing holistically.
That was my proposal from the very onset.
Then in that section, then we would talk about children who, a child who is in need of care as a result of abuse or neglect or something, you know, involving substance. I'm not using the right terminology now. Using substances, and then to say that children with substance abuse problem will be treated in separate facilities from others. And such children must be dealt with
There's no need for us to repeat all of that.
So all I'm saying to you is that maybe we should delete it from here and just deal with it under constitutional.
You see, this has taken us long, basically, to reaffirm a decision we've already taken. There was an attempt to escape an assignment, and that attempt has failed. So the assignment still stands. You have a task that you must accomplish, and that's the long and short of the story, after a long discussion. Yes.
Chair, sorry, I'm not really taking you back, but I didn't really get a chance because we jumped straight into 5. But
take me back, we're still dealing with
38. Okay.
Yeah.
So may I proceed?
Please proceed.
We start talking in 38 about a license. Now, where's the first time sentence? In 38.1. Would you want me to read it to you, Chair? Until he or she is released on license in terms of section 43. Okay? No, I presume it's this act. It is section 43 of
the act. So we have a system of release on license in this act. All right.
Well, yes, I don't know the term. I want to know what it means.
Yeah.
And why are we referring to
until we get to 43 where the license has been created.
Thank you.
All right. Anything else in relation to the act? Yes, Deputy Minister.
Chairperson, going back to 5B, I must assume that regarded is a typo that should have been registered. In other words, that it should be, if a child is placed in a child and youth care center, such centers must be registered as a public or private center for the purpose of the act. In other words, conform to the requirements of registration. Because in A, it says in the Children's Act that treatment centers, child and youth care centers can also provide treatment for substance abuse. It says, a child and youth care center may, in addition to its residential care program, offer the treatment of children for addiction and dependence-producing substances. It says that in the Child Care Act. So what I'm saying is this word regarded is what makes this thing nonsensical. But
it goes deeper than that. It goes deeper than that. We had a lengthy debate emanating from clause 23, which concluded on a note that it is apparent that we need to refine the transversal system we want to create between the a holistic view of this thing and say, where we are dealing with children involved in the program of substance abuse, whether as users or as victims in the sense that the families are themselves users, resulting in the breakdown in the life of the child, blah, 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 we need to have a transversal system that talks or that creates a cross-referral or transversal system that has a referral backwards and forwards between the two systems. The system established here and this is the system established there. We further said that it is apparent, as is envisaged in the Children's Act, that you may need to create a competence within a child and youth care facility under the Children's Act for children with this problem to be dealt with in those facilities, provided that those facilities, insofar as they deal with children in those situations, comply with the requirements of this Act. We said equally, we may need to create the capacity or competence for treatment facilities, possibly halfway houses and the works, the dispensation in this Act, a competence to deal with child users specifically and to cater for their particular needs within the prevention and treatment system that we're creating in this Act. So that 23 will then become a point of referral between the two systems and creating a structured and organized way in which the two acts can talk to each other insofar as children are concerned. So that way you would then be able to deal with these things. Now, insofar as compliance of treatment centers with children's requirements are concerned, in the licensing conditions or the registration conditions, you're going to say that that treatment center can apply to be licensed as a treatment center that can also receive, or only for that matter, receive and treat children. Equally, a child and youth care center that's going to provide services, treatment services to children in that child and youth care center, would also have to be in compliance with certain norms and standards relating to treatment of substance abuse set out in this law, not in the Children's Act, but in this law, to the extent that that child and youth care center is going to provide that service. So we're saying that your task, your assignment is to go back and refine that transversal system that vacillates between the two dispensations. All right? So that it expands your options, so that it allows for transferal to and forth between the two systems. So all issues relating to that would then be dealt with there. And that is the assignment that's been deferred this morning. And can I propose that we don't go back to this discussion until the department comes back with a proposal that we can look at and refine in the next round. Okay. That then takes us to clause 39. So that clause 5, sub 5, is flagged as part of the Boyki course, that 23 is going to be focusing on. Right. 39, anybody with anything? What do we deal with in 39? Transfer of involuntary service user from and to treatment center.
Anybody who wants to kick start? Yes, Ms. Sato.
Thank you, Chair. 59.1C. Transfer an involuntary service user from one private treatment center to another private treatment center. If the involuntary service user concerned is likely to benefit from the treatment or training provided at the public or private treatment center to which he or she has been transferred. Now, in the first half of that, we're talking about transferring from one private treatment center to another private treatment center. I don't know if it's a typo or what, it doesn't make sense.
All right. Is it accepted as a typo? Yes, Ms. Vivian? Which stuff is that? Transfer an involuntary service user from one private treatment center to another private treatment center if the involuntary service user concerned is likely to benefit from the treatment or training provided at a public or private treatment center to which he or she Now we accept that, but the problem is why I refer to public in the same paragraph, because the paragraph deals with private to private. Paragraph C, 1C, sub 1C, I think it's an error, likely to benefit from the treatment or training provided. Doesn't that deal with it?
think firstly that if should be a standard, the sentence starting with if should be a standalone, because it refers to both A, B, and C. It should not form part of C, but it should just be a standalone below C, so that you can read A and then move straight to if, or you can read B and move straight to because as it stands currently, it reads as if. The sentence starting with if only applies to C, when in fact it applies to all three of them. But I still want to understand what the committee is proposing in terms of whether A should remain private, public, and B remain public, private, and are we saying they must remain as they are? Okay, Mr. Fandela, I understand.
Oh, now I see. So you just need, after the comma, to move the rest of the sentence below. Then it makes sense. Then the thing is correct. It's amazing how drafting can send everybody in a whirlwind. A deputy minister.
I agree with what was said. I would actually propose that if that must be removed from the, it should go further up. The 39.1 subject to the subsection 2, and then before the director general, it should actually go in there in that quantity, because then it applies to A, B, and C. So it should precede A, B, and C.
So you want to start with the words, if the voluntary service user concerned is likely to benefit from the treatment or training provided at a public or private treatment center to which he or she is to be transferred.
The Director General
may aim transfer and in transfer the involuntary service user from one public treatment center to another public treatment center, or the transfer, etc. C. Drafter, this is your terrain.
If we move it to where the deputy is suggesting, you'll see it becomes a very long sentence and there'll be lots and lots of commas in it. But it's, for me, it reads easier if you 39.1 stays at it as it is, and ABC stays at it as it is, and then you just move it right to the bottom. So
look, we will only effect an amendment if it's absolutely necessary. Because, you see, if we move words, then even the amending process becomes a lot more complicated. Our experience with the Children's Act is that we have until end of next week. So the simplest correction is the preferred correction. If you just tap, what is the button on the computer? The one that you, the tab. If the tab solves the problem, let's tap it.
Yep.
Full stop. All right. Yes. Honorable. Why do I keep on calling you Honorable?
Because we are soulmates. So
because she's leaving now, yes. Step in her. In her shoe.
Yeah. The what would be the situation then in terms of this responsibility to the Director General? In relation to the 38 that we did when we talked about the magistrate, the order, what would be the relationship in terms of the powers or the responsibilities?
As I understand it, once the magistrate has ordered the placement, that person falls in the care of the Director General. The same thing with the Children's Act. an order has been granted for the placement of a child, transfers between systems no longer requires the child to go back to the magistrate and for the magistrate to reconsider, because it then blocks the court system with a lot of administrative stuff. So it's just a tool to enable administratively the transfer of people from the one arrangement to the other. But somebody might say, I almost used the informal way, things can happen along the way and people's rights might be at issue and you may want court supervision because that's the whole purpose. Otherwise you would have the entire system run by social development without reference to the courts, be it the children's protection system or this particular system. But yeah, I think that in practice I don't think there's been major problems with transfers for the children, and I'm sure we've done transfers in this context as well under the existing law. Does the existing law provide for transfers? So it's something that's been there. To avoid unnecessary, already justice is complaining that we're clogging the courts with a lot of administrative stuff. So it's just to make it unnecessary to have to go back to court for every little thing. All right. Okay. Now, let's move. Oh, 40. Is it 40? Right, no comments. What's the heading of 40? Prisons.
Transfer of involuntary is from now, for example.
Now, from a prison. No agreement. Correctional Services must amend its law. We're not going to do it for them here. Not our place. Now I've had the heading. Right. Anybody who has any gripe?
But what?
what are we going to say here?
Which minister is designating in consultation with which minister? Minister of Correctional Services.
Yeah. In consultation with the minister by order in writing transferred to a treatment center designated by the minister. Designated by the minister, any person who is undergoing a term. So who designates? I thought we earlier on, I was raising it in terms of.
Minister of Correctional Services may, in consultation with the minister, that is the Minister of Social Development, by order in writing, transfer to a public treatment center designated by the minister, meaning the Minister of Social Development.
Not of health?
No, of social development. Any person who is undergoing a term of imprisonment in any correctional facility, which is subject to the provision.
I thought it refers to Minister of Health.
Interesting. How do we take a person out of a prison to a facility purely by virtue of a decision, a determination of a minister and not of a court, of a judge? Was this worked out with correctional services and not found to be in line with the system there? Is it provided for in the existing law?
I wouldn't know what is provided in the existing law, but I think the rationale behind this is that it may well be that this person is abusing substance. That's why they would want to refer this person to any facility designated by the Minister of Social Development. But I wouldn't know whether, I'm not sure whether the existing law does make provision.
Clever way of getting out of a prison. Start taking drugs, you know. They say treatment centers are like holidays, holiday resorts. Yes, Chief Director.
Subject to subsection 2 and despite anything to the contrary contained in any other law or in the Correctional Services, doesn't this, the Correctional Services Act, does this then imply that there is it is legislated and that there's a provision in this act that could regulate this type of arrangement? I hear what you're saying in terms of easy way getting out of prison, but I'm just asking if your question, your question initially, if this is in terms of any legislation. Because what I seem to be reading here is that in the Correctional Services Act, the minister may in consultation.
We're actually trumping anything in the Correctional Services Act. We're making this law supersede the Correctional Services Act or any other law for that matter.
Yeah. Okay, in that situation, I'm not even sure if the correctional facilities would have, or I'm asking,
who
the treatment facilities, the treatment facilities would have the capacity and the adequate
to deal with
security, to deal with this type of person. And maybe Gala can assist us. It used to be in correctional services. They have their own treatment center within the
The Department of Correctional Services do not have treatment centers. They only have the medical facilities within the medical services within the facility, their facilities. They usually refer them to hospitals and then they guard them while they.
You see, when a court sentences a person, if it's brought before the court that this person also has substance problems, in terms of the earlier provisions that we've dealt with, the court has the option, in lieu of referring that person or sentencing that person to a prison, direct that this person be referred to treatment center. here we're creating a possibility where circumventing the role of the court, and it's an administrative thing where the Minister of Correctional Services decides, ah, this person is a problem for us here, we don't have the facilities to deal with these people. In any case, our prisons are too full and we don't have space to really do anything more than just constrain these people. And in any case, they can't access this thing. All these therapies that we talked about earlier, because it will simply be illegal and they'll just be dealt with as other prisoners are dealt with there. So now let's take the easy route, let's transfer this program to social development. Well, it says in consultation, which means social development must be prepared to take it up. There might be a slip up, some junior official gets told that, hey, a prisoner is coming your way. And she says, oh, she thinks that that is the law. She's obliged to accept this prisoner. They take this prisoner, and the prisoner comes in there and messes up your entire treatment center. Puts it upside down. I would imagine if the statistics are anything to go by, the link between crime, serious crime and substance abuse. Anyway, Mr. Kalayamudim, was this the outcome of negotiations between social development and correctional services? And Mr. Vivius, what is the current system in the existing act?
Maybe referring back to the issue of court orders referring prisoners to treatment centers. Those orders have always been there, but it has been always difficult for Department of Correctional Services to send these people to treatment centers specifically. Maybe in the first place because some of the treatment centers are far, but in most cases it was because of the escape rate that the Department of Correctional Services experienced that they did not, they found it difficult to transfer people there. They will instead go back to the court and inform the court that they won't be able to do that, and then explain all the circumstances that they face to the court, and then in most cases the court will withdraw that and then request that person be serving while inside the correctional facility. And then in some cases you will find that now the department will appoint a external service provider to come in and service this particular person while in the correctional facility.
So that's been the practice. And what has the existing act said? Has it created such a thing, or are we creating something new? Do we know?
Jefferson, there is provision in the existing act for these transfers, but as Mr. Kalayamudim said, that in practice, I'm not aware of any instance where it actually happened, successfully happened. But I speak on a correction.
So the idea was to simply regurgitate, well, to retain what is under existing legislation. All right. Well, if it's in the Act, why do we want to take it out? Yes, Chief Director.
You just alerted us to the risk that really if this act supersedes the correctional services, I mean, it's going to be difficult. Most of these centers, you know, are not meant for gangsters and drug dealers and users and what have you. There's no way. I mean, if we have the, as you correctly point out, the rate of escapes that have in correctional facilities with all the security that they have, how much more in these treatment facilities? I think we're exposing people to great danger. And I think this is a matter that needs to be reviewed.
You drafted the law.
I know
you went to cabinet and convinced cabinet that this policy position is the most desirable. Now you want us to undo policy that has been endorsed by cabinet. We are not policy makers. We are lawmakers. Ms. Sapo.
Chair, it's not only the issue of the security of the convicted users getting out, but what about the people inside? I mean, how are they going to, are they going to be kept in separate facilities from the other users? I mean, it poses huge problems for the treatment center.
But isn't it so in any case that people who, in lieu of being sentenced to a prison, can in fact be sentenced to a treatment center currently anyway, who have committed an offense in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act? That whole system there, it's already there. So it's clear that it's up to you to decide how you deal with the categorization and registration of treatment centers in such a way that inasmuch as we've dealt with the issue of children, you should equally deal with the particular case of people who are involved, who are in trouble with the law, adults in trouble with the law. Remember with Child and Youth Care Centers, for example, we provided for a different type of child and youth care center which takes the place of a children's home to that which takes the place of a secure care facility, because the two clearly deal with very distinct lines. The ones that are in trouble with the law, the others are vulnerable children that need some kind of protection. So you could, in your normal say you want to be able to register that facility specifically to be able to deal with a continuum of users ranging from those that are problematic to those that are less problematic, that those that need confinement to those that do not require confinement. Right.
The problem that I'm having, Chen, is that we don't have enough facilities already now for to expect to have other prisons within treatment facilities. For me, I don't think it's workable. And Chen, I think maybe the option of correctional services getting an external service provider in the field of substance abuse to actually come and work with the, it's a more safer option.
This one is specifically referring to public funding.
It's a safer option, Chair. But also, Chair, in terms of a court convicting any person, remember we did indicate that it can be done in lieu of a sentence. But remember, we also said that the input that came from one of the departments, I don't know whether, I think it was staff, was to look at serious committer of serious offences, people who have committed serious offences. I did indicate this to the House to say how do we then deal with people who have committed serious offences? Do we also make a serious crime? And we said that we would define serious crime, so that we draw a distinction between those people who can be, because that's a kind of diversion. You can't sentence a drug dealer to a treatment facility in lieu of sentence, but you can send a person who's committed a crime, a substance abuse related crime, which is not too serious to such a facility. And I think this is what I indicated earlier, that we would have to really look at and clean up.
Okay. Except that the police from SAP said 60%, the statistics that he showed us, remember, said 60% of all the committed crimes are driven by substance abuse. So, you know, but I don't
to take up 60% of the
because if you go and kill a person because you use drugs, I mean, you can't be sentenced to a rehabilitation center. You've got to serve your sentence for murder. So all I'm saying, Chairperson, is that we would need to look at this and draw a distinction between the types of people that can be sent to treatment center in lieu of sentences.
Did we resolve the definition of the serious crime?
Yeah.
We did.
No, we did not.
I thought I heard the chief director saying, yeah, my interpretation of the word, yeah, yes.
No, maybe I misunderstood the question, we said that we would look at that and draw that kind of distinction. Sorry if I
mistaken. You're getting to the critical stages of things. You're not may just result in a law being created that you will not want to. All right. Yeah.
Okay, maybe let me bring this picture. Maybe it will assist. In cases that the chief director Ms. Gela is referring to, there are instances whereby the court sentences a person to maybe six months imprisonment, and then for the purpose of going through a treatment program. And then this person, immediately when he arrives at correctional institution, they immediately, because this person is immediately put on parole, because 6 months is a very, very short period in terms of their parole system. This person immediately qualifies to be released on parole. And then the Minister of Correctional Services, as a result, when releasing this person on parole, place this person at the particular treatment center, because he was sentenced to correctional services for the purpose of receiving treatment, then this person will be directed to the treatment center. But now, if this person is not going to behave well or violate his conditions of parole while at the particular treatment center, the correctional officials will collect this person and bring him to prison and serve his 6 months term. I think that is something that we can also look into.
All right. And it starts by saying, notwithstanding the provisions of the Correctional Services Act. So we're saying these provisions are going to be the dominant provisions. So we looked at the Correctional Services Act and see what is it that we could possibly be trumping in this regard. It's very nice and to trump other laws, but you must know exactly what you do, because there may be safeguards in those laws that you're excluding because you want this one to dominate, and it happens not to have those safeguards, and then you're taking responsibility, basically. You're exposing yourself. The only safeguard that I see here is in consultation as opposed to after consultation with the minister, which means that correctional services can't go ahead unless there's consensus with the Minister of Social Development. Mm-hmm. It's a situation where you turn down all the requests. And the Minister of Correctional Services is saying that you're frustrating the object of the Act.
This in consultation with the minister to minister consultation, it's simply placing a responsibility to ministers, but transacting, it's happening at junior level. So it means a correctional
all of that will be delegated.
So a correctional service officer in Coxton talks to
over the phone.
A social worker over the phone on the district office.
Why they've already put this person in the van already? I'm frustrating your attempt to give him. Please proceed.
I was just wanting to that practice, that low level clarity. You know that I wanted to hear from the managers, the other side, you know, of the department, to say, is that what they anticipate? You know.
I will not remove this clause until you have satisfied that you've talked to correctional services and convinced them that you planning their systems in anticipation, and suddenly this committee decides to undo deals that have been entered into elsewhere. Yes?
Maybe we should also read 14 subsection 1 in conjunction with subsection 2, because it actually adds additional conditions, and you'll see that it's not going to be very easy to just transfer a person between the two. I mean, from a correctional facility to a treatment center, because there are certain conditions also, other than the consultation process. I mean, if I may read subsection 2, it says, no person may be transferred unless it is desirable that such person should, before he or she is returned to a community, receive or undergo treatment or training in a public treatment center. And such person is likely to benefit from the particular kind of treatment and training provided in the public.
Well, the final stages of the sentence,
yeah.
Serving of the sentence, person. So it's a different issue altogether. All right. No, but I think what he's saying, interesting.
I thought subclause 1 is indicating that you can transfer a person.
Yeah.
After having consultation between the two government ministers.
Uh-huh.
But then it also sets additional conditions to say you cannot be transferred unless you meet the two conditions. And I'm saying that the two are linked because it's related to the transfer from a correctional facility to a treatment center.
You see, yeah. I think there's an element of ambiguity. In the one instance, it could mean that you are creating a single dispensation which is in effect amplified in sub 2. That you can't read sub 1 without reading sub 2. And that sub 2 is really the that you're really talking of a particular category of people, namely those who have served their sentences, but it is necessary before they are released into the community to make sure that the last bit of their journey involves commitment to a treatment center. That's the one interpretation.
When you read 40 subsection 1, subject to subsection 2, right from the beginning.
All right. So you're reinforcing your point. Like a lawyer is determined to win his case.
No, I mean, I'm determined to clarify the case, Chair.
All right. Okay. So basically you're saying that subsection 1 only is relevant to the extent that it relates to subsection 2. All right. Okay, maybe we'll take you on that and we'll assume that that will stick. Okay. Why am I beginning to sneeze? Anything else in relation to section clause 40 before we move to clause 41? Anything new? Yes, the sample new.
Okay, I'm not trying to be difficult, but I'm just trying to understand. In 41B, in the Children's Act, the Minister may, by order in writing, transfer to a public treatment centre any child who is placed in a child and youth care centre or in alternative care. Now, we've had this discussion about when a child is put into a child and youth care centre for treatment, or how is that designated? What? So why would they then be transferred back from a child and youth care centre where they're receiving treatment to a public treatment? Or am I being off?
If the child and youth care center is inadequate to deal with the needs of the child, because it's primarily a child and youth care center. Why do we start with the words in the Children's Act?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think it takes care of it. Right. 41. What's the time now? 10 to 6. We are apparently finishing at 6. Are we nearly finished? Can we finish at 6:30?
Transport complications.
Transport leaves at 8:15. Who's transport complications? They need to leave by 6. Yeah, let's drag it a little bit, see if we can really finish this session today. If we can, that would be jackpot. Lotto. Let's push the lotto. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. 3. What's the link? Is there any, okay, maybe I should ask my question. But the linkage between the other two sections and section 3, subsection 3, a person transferred to a public treatment center in terms of subsection 1 must be regarded as having been discharged from the provisions of the Act governing the financial commitment, which means that the person, it should be the last part of his sentence, and they would then by being in a facility.
Yeah,
how about the sentence? You know, the part of the sentence, the last part of the sentence.
It simply means it must be somebody who has been completely released from that other facility and is no longer having attachments in relation to that other facility, no longer under obligations in relation to that other facility. What if that other facility is releasing them to this facility with conditions in terms of their own law? We've already trumped their own law anyway. So we've really gone to all the way, we've gone the full matter here. Yeah.
Maybe your response would be on 41. Because 41 deals with the retransfer.
We'll see when we get to it. But as it stands, it seems as if you read 41 from its very onset, it trumps everything. Anything whatsoever. Yes, Shoni.
Yeah, I think as we go along, it kind of connects, because there's also another part of the Act, the 2761I, where a prisoner or a sentenced person would do 1/6 of a sentence, provided that they do a program. It's either substance abuse or a sexual offender. So when you read this, it makes sense if you think of that act more, because if you don't do the program, then you have to sit out your own sentence. And also here when they talk about the retransfer, which means that if you don't complete your treatment in the center, that you'll have to come to the rest of, or your full sentence in your prison. That's the idea that I think makes more sense in that sense.
Subsection 3. It actually says subject to section 41(1), which means you are discharged from, for example, the law related to the correctional services, subject to 41(1). 41(1) does allow for you to be retransferred back to the correctional services facility. So it's not that you are entirely discharged. There are certain conditions attached, and they will be outlined in 41.
We're happy with the whole dispensation as it's couched, that you can be a free man and then be an unfree man again, purely by way of administrative decision. Yes, Sean?
Yeah, it's the same as when you do parole.
Yeah.
If you don't stick to the, you know, the restrictions and the constraints, then you will have, then you end up absconded, and you are taken back to prison to serve out the rest of your sentence. And I think that, I think it was Arafat, you know, their comment or their submission about whether they, you must make it an additional sentence for that abscondment, because when you abscond, you have to go serve as a sentence, and in some cases, the court actually gives you another fine or sentence on that as well.
But the question of taking the person back to court would be a different matter that would have to be dealt with specifically. But the issue is just restoring the hitherto arrangements that were applicable to the person.
All right. Legal lawyers, legal brains, you satisfy that this is watertight enough. That goes to the rest of that clause. Or are we in 41 now? Have we read 41? Are we now going to 42? Are we happy with 41 as a whole? Any other matters or issues in relation to 41?
Sure. Yeah. On 41, I thought you said if a tab can solve a problem, we should use the tab. When you go to 41, 1C, it's on line 33, just after Minister of Health, and is that if...
After the comma.
Yeah.
Return to any person.
Yeah.
No. That should go to...
If such person, we can also tap that one also, so that it applies to both A, B, and C. It's on line 33.
If such person,
yeah, like we did,
that's where the tapping happens,
yeah.
And or child is part of that sentence. If such person, so the tap doesn't happen there at or child. Do we remove that tap there?
Tap would start from if,
and then it's a continuum all the way until the end of the sentence. Right, because my Braille version has a tab at or child. So yours doesn't have a tab there. Alright. Okay. Alright. Anything else in relation to 41? We happy? We want to go to 42. Leader.
Not submission for 42.
Let's leave off absent. Anybody who wants to raise an issue? Can you use your microphone?
It proposes that referral matters between the Department of Social Development and the Department of Health and Correctional Services be implemented through the mechanism, through the establishment of the mechanism.